We are back once again, 213th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad you joined us once again this week. If you're new around these parts, we do have a Christian-specific segment. We try to do that about the halfway mark of the show. Be sure and stick around for it. It's honestly the whole point of the show. It really, honest to goodness, is. And even if you're a non-believer, stick around and listen to it. I do have non-believers that contact me and say, you know, I really enjoy the Christian-specific segment. So you might want to stick around. It won't be like anything you're expecting. We always get it out of the way. We pass around the offering plate. I know, you know, if you probably listen to several shows, everybody's, you know, asking you to support what they're doing. We do the same, but I don't spend much time. Just pass around the plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. If you do want to be a part of that, it's easy. Go down to the description page for the show here on Radio Albion. See, I got snail mail, got Bitcoin, got Monero, got an email address down there. You can drop your notes. If you got a different cryptocurrency, drop me an email for that. More than likely, I can get you an address for that as well. This brings us, of course, to listener supporter mailbag. Before I get into that, the regular listener show, y'all know I record the show on the weekend. It airs on Tuesdays. I record the show on the weekend, and this week is no exception. I'm recording this show on Saturday. And as such, I'm not going to talk about Sven, okay, because I haven't had a chance to talk to him with his situation. So I'm not going to talk about it because I haven't had a chance to discuss it with him. So you know, don't be thinking like, you know, man, he ain't even talking about his homie. It ain't that. I just hadn't been able to visit with him yet, so I'm not going to talk about that. We're going to do the listener supporter mailbag. I'm trying to be upbeat. You know, nobody wants to listen to a show that sounds all dour and such. GPD, I think the clown has poked the bear, Russia, one too many times, Mr. T. You know, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about how World War III is currently playing out, because we are in the Third World War. Understand it, you know, people had these visions, they saw the videos. You don't want to be stuck like the U.S. The U.S. floats carrier groups around. I always make this joke because it always makes people say, well, America, what other countries got all of these carrier groups in the mighty U.S. Navy? And I always joke, my response to that is always, if the Japanese decide to get sneaky and attack Pearl Harbor again, buddy, we're ready. These things are obsolete. We float them around. It's like we're reliving World War II. World War III is broke out again. It is, and is playing out in a different way. It's an asymmetrical conflict, at least to this point, on many fronts. Not on every front. I mean, there are actual fighting going on, obviously, such as in the Ukraine, Syria, and many other places. But World War III is already going. And I was thinking about this because a lot of people have been critical of Russia's approach in the Ukraine. Sometimes I've been critical of it. I mean, seriously, it seems like they won't have a plan. It's like, what are y'all even doing here? You know, I mean, when their special military operation broke out, I was on this show and I said something about, like, you know, 10 days, this will be wrapped up. Because I, among others who, you know, study these things far more than I do, they're very much more qualified than I do. These other people were saying the same thing because they assumed Russia was going to go in shock and awe style and basically wipe Ukraine off the map and make it, like, I don't know, a DMZ or something. Here we are over a year later, and they're still there. Now, the Ukraine standards, which is just another word for the State Department, is saying this shows that Russia can't do anything. They're incompetent. Their military is a joke, so on and so forth. And again, there's people who are actual experts whose opinion I value, I think is a good opinion. Many of them kind of have this same bewildered response. You know, why is Russia like doing this kid gloves response? What are they doing? And as I look at the events unfolding, and this is just my amateur opinion, I look at these events unfolding and I'm thinking, you know, the asymmetrical nature of World War III. What is Russia accomplishing? I mean, Russia's taking casualties. You can take casualties in every war, except U.S. media wars, you know, like the U.S. goes in somewhere and they like, they take 20,000 casualties and they're like, well, we sadly lost 24 troops. Like, nobody believes that shit. Y'all talking about we lost 24 troops. You're going to take casualties, but they're taking very few. In all reality, they've taken very few casualties. The media in the U.S., the Western media was saying like last year that Russia is running out of ammunition and missiles. And now it turns out that was all projection. Now you're quietly having these Western governments saying we're running out of ammunition. They demand you send more to the Ukraine, and they're like, we don't have any more to send. I read an article several weeks back that the formerly Great Britain, which is now just pretty much... we'll just leave it at the formerly Great Britain. The formerly Great Britain, which likes to LARP as though there's still some sort of Great Britain, announced that they had enough ammunition and stuff for their army to fight an actual war for about 8 hours, maybe a day if they were lucky and, like, you know, pick and choose their shots one day. I was thinking about this, the asymmetrical nature of this Third World War. And, you know, if you think about all of the things that happened, taking it in, you know, take in the big picture and just focus on one thing, like these things are isolated from one another, because they're not. Russia, with their special military operation, is slowly but surely grinding down the militaries of the West. I don't think Russia has any desire to invade Europe. I think that's stupid. But if they did, do you think Germany can defend itself? I mean, if nuclear weapons aren't on the table, and I ain't saying they're not on the table, but for our discussion's sake, if nuclear weapons are off the table, they're going to roll through Europe. They could roll through Europe. Germany don't even have any bullets left to fire. They sent like 5 tanks or some shit to Ukraine. They're like, well, we're pretty short now. Finland is going to be a part of NATO. Yeah, I'm sure that bimbo they got running the country. She's probably ready to lead a war council if Russia did decide to roll in there. They do all this because they know Russia probably doesn't really want to do that. That's why you got all these supposedly serious countries in Europe and like their defense ministers and all their cabinet ministers in the government that would actually be in charge if a war were to break out. They're all like these dumbass old ladies that don't even know what they're doing. Because they don't really think that's going to happen. If they really thought it was going to happen, there'd be a man in charge. That's like the U.S. The U.S. still thinks it's going to stay proxy or whatever. The way you're going to know if the U.S. is planning to actually get into an actual open war with Russia and China is if all of a sudden all the army recruiting efforts, all of a sudden it's nothing but white guys. Then you're going to know. You heard it here first. If you need a clue that the U.S. is actually planning to take this hot, now I ain't saying it couldn't go hot because they're idiots and just stumble off into it. That's probably actually the most likely scenario here. But if they are planning, like, we taking this thing hot 8 months from now, year from now, you're going to see all these army military recruiting ads. All of a sudden it's going to be, you know, muscular, handsome, strong, young white men, probably with a southern drawl. You see, all the women and diversity thing, they're going to go out the window if they plan to actually do it. Anyway, Russia is grinding up the military capacity of the West. And this is defensive in nature because as they grind that capacity up, if the U.S., for instance, decided to go ahead and just go on in, just go in and get hot with Russia, they're going to have to drag Europe in, and Europe is in no position. I don't think the U.S. is in any position. Even the U.S. is complaining they're running low on artillery shells, or running low on this, or running low on that. You see, as they grind up that military capacity, they're grinding up their ability to get hostile. So that's why it's defensive in nature, because they're not going to be able to get offensive with Russia if they don't have any bullets, if they don't have any equipment. They done sent it all to the Ukraine. That's one aspect of it. China, on the other aspect, is doing the... Remember, asymmetrical warfare. World War II didn't look anything like World War I. Everybody makes fun of the French. Everybody makes fun of the French because Hitler rolled right in there, you know? And people in America are stupid. And they'll sit there and be like, oh, the French, you know, a bunch of surrender monkeys. But Hitler just rolled in there. They didn't know. The mistake the French made is the mistake the U.S. constantly makes. They were fighting the last war. They were in a great position if World War I broke out again, just like the U.S. with their mighty carrier groups floating around. So I say, if Japan decides to get sneaky and attack Pearl Harbor, we're ready this time. It's the same thing. Laugh all you want. They all make the same blunders. France was in a perfect position. They were expecting it. They were ready to fight World War I again. They were expecting the Germans to go out there and dig a bunch of trenches and start lobbing shells. Here we go. We've done this before. We know what to expect. But they didn't do what they expected. Likewise, we're not fighting World War II again. We're not in World War II. We're not in World War II again. This is asymmetrical warfare. China, on the other hand, is working on they're waging the war on the economic front. All these nations, China's going around now making all these deals with all this nation, all these different countries to do international trade in their currency and not the dollar. That's war, people. This is war. It's not rocket firing and grenades throwing and artillery shells firing off and bombs falling. It ain't that. But it's war nonetheless. Every country they peel away that says, yeah, we ain't going to deal with this dollar. And the U.S. brought this on themselves, as is many often the case. They're the ones that weaponized the dollar. They could have left that alone. But you see, they're stupid. They thought it'd be a great idea. Let's flex this dollar. And they wound up shooting themselves in the foot. Now everybody looking at that going, am I going to be next? Am I going to be the next one to have my international assets? You know, if my assets aren't safe in these banks, they can just come along and sanction and seize our assets. And we don't need to be bothering in these dollars. Peeling people off. You see all these people. Oh, all these people. I'm sorry. All these countries are picking a side. That's World War. It's World War. I think it was Honduras the other day. I'm doing this off the top of my head, so if I got it wrong, I'm sorry. But I think it was Honduras. The other day, Honduras stepped out and said, we don't recognize Taiwan. We only have official diplomatic relations with Beijing, with China, because there's only one China. Now, you may sit there and go, Honduras, who cares? But see, they're not the only ones. You see, everybody, because you might sit here and say, well, what does Honduras matter? But it does matter. Because you see, even a little nation like Honduras knows that it is necessary. They've got to pick a side. They either got to choose China or they got to choose the gay anal empire. It's one or the other. Uncle Anal or the U.S. or China. I'm being funny. I'm trying to be funny. I'm trying to be in a good mood. Even a little country like Honduras understands you're going to have to pick a side. There ain't going to be no neutral ground. You're going to stay out of it. Switzerland has always been neutral throughout their history. But you see, they picked the U.S. They have chosen a side. They made it a point to choose a side. Why? Why? Everybody's like, why would Switzerland suddenly throw out their neutrality? Because in this world war, everybody has to pick a side. There is no neutrality. You're either going to take part on one side or the other. You ain't going to be able to be on both sides of the fence. That ain't going to work. Switzerland picked the U.S., their side. These other countries are picking the China/Russia side. But everybody is choosing a side. If this doesn't ring your bell, that world war is going on. Just because there ain't bombs falling on your city yet. Americans are so damn stupid, they think a bomb will never fall on their city. It could happen. As much as I believe that God hates the U.S., I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. China is doing the economic angle of this asymmetrical warfare. They're moving people away. They're attacking the economy. They laugh. I laugh whenever the U.S. sits around and talks about China better not get out of line. We sanction your ass, too. And it's like, it would be like, that's like somebody like putting a shotgun in their own mouth. And they're like, don't get sassy with me. I'll pull the trigger. And you're going to get like brain particles on your carpet. And you ain't going to get that out. Don't get uppity with me. I'll pull the trigger. It's crazy, but it is. It's asymmetrical warfare. You see, all these countries are choosing a side. They're picking a side. Everybody picking a side. They're going to be a side to pick. Even little countries in Latin America, they understand. You sit there and say, well, who cares? They care. They went and signed a deal with China. China cares. So obviously, it's not stupid. Obviously, it's not irrelevant. Everybody's having to pick a side. No matter who you are, you're going to have to pick a side. I got more listener support mailbag, by the way. That was just one note, but only I only have two. So, greetings, Grandpa. Greetings, Grandpa. Y'all thought we was three listener support mailbag. That was just my response to one short note. That would tell the way I'm feeling. Let's see here. Greetings, Grandpa. Hope this finds you well as I write this. It is the morning of the day Trump is supposed to be arrested. Yawn. I'm so tired of this clown show movie. While out in the real world, it seems like more and more of the people are NPCs. Nothing would surprise me anymore. I don't even know what's going on anymore. Stay sane. And that's from Jackie. And yeah, I told Dr. Johnson the other day, I said, you know, I'm so over this whole clown world thing. I am. I'm just done. They indicted Trump. Whatever you think of Trump. But still, they've indicted Trump. They just convicted Ricky Vaughn from the old Twitter days for memes. They're talking 10 years in prison for Ricky Vaughn for posting a meme because they said that was somehow election interference. Hillary Clinton's campaign funded the fake dossier and got a fake warrant in order to get a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. But that's nothing. The government, we know, was instructing Twitter to ban people that had opinions they didn't like. No problem. This guy's facing 10 years for putting up a meme because somebody could have totally taken that seriously and thought that they were voting by text. Never mind that assertion is a condemnation of the stupid democracy system that we supposedly have. Anyway, if you got people so damn dumb, they're going to go on Twitter on somebody that's obviously a MAGA guy. His avatar is a MAGA hat. And that guy's giving you instructions to tweet to Hillary. I don't think people are that dumb. By the way, here's the insult. They were acting like they were saying without saying it. The government was that this was fooling black people. No, seriously, they were saying that without saying it, you know, but that was the inference here is and as is usual the case with these champions of so-called social justice, they're the biggest insulters of people that they claim to be representing in the world. You see, I don't think black people are so damn stupid that they're going to look at a MAGA page, a guy that's avatar is a MAGA hat, and see this thing where you could text and vote for Hillary. I don't think black people are so damn stupid they're going to do that. But that's the government's assertion, basically. Point is, they convicted him. Jury of his peers has convicted a jury of his peers in New York City. Does he have any peers in New York City? Trump's indicted. Oh, and I saw a story the other day that the government is the Department of quote unquote justice is planning to round up another 1,000 people from the January 6th protests. That's still going on. I was out and about, and I was in a place the other day and had this big thing up, you know, about saluting our military heroes, and this whole thing was full of messages about thank you so much for fighting for our freedom and our liberty. Where do people get that? I mean, what sort of non-reality do you have to live in? I mean, do people really? I mean, I still see people, I still see businesses with signs like, if you enjoy your freedom, think of that. What sort of parallel reality do these people live in? And honestly, how do I get there? Because I'm done with clown world. I'm sick of this shit. I think of the guy, there's a scene, and I don't remember, I think it's the second Matrix movie. It's one of the Matrix movies, and they meet this guy, and it's been years, so if I screw some of this up, but they meet this guy, and the guy is aware that he's in the Matrix. But he's working for the Matrix people. He's in there. He says, well, yeah, I know this is all fake. But you know what? When I eat this steak, it still tastes real. Maybe that is what it's like to live in this parallel reality to where you should think of that because we have all of this freedom. We're totally the beacon of light for the world. I don't really want to live in no fake reality. I'm just being pretty cynical today. Y'all lucky I'm able to squeeze out a chuckle. What quantum reality? What denial of reality? What sort of parallel reality do you live in to be able to sit there and talk with a straight face about God bless our troops for fighting for our freedom? I don't understand. I was talking to, you know, we have all this stuff going on, like with the train derailments, for instance. That's just one example. The train derailments going on. You got people cooking up all kinds of crazy ass conspiracy, talking about the government's derailing the trains on purpose. And I understand. I get it. I just disagree with that notion. And people will say, well, yeah, but it can't be a coincidence. Why is this happening now? It has to be because these super clever people that are running everything are intentionally derailing the trains. Well, that's, see, I believe that's the mistake. I agree with the notion that this isn't a coincidence, because obviously it's not. We used to not have this problem. I've been around longer than probably a whole lot of you. And I remember when we didn't even think about these things because they all just worked. I agree that it's not a coincidence that now we're having things like, you know, and I'm just sticking with this one example. There's many such examples, many such cases. But now we're having this happen all the time. I agree it's not a coincidence. What I disagree with is the notion that that means that somebody's doing it on purpose. That these evil masterminds that run everything are intentionally derailing the trains for reasons. No. No, we just got to look at the big picture. For one thing, they've been hiring people based on checking off the correct diversity boxes, regardless of talent, regardless of ability. They've been doing that for years. So what does that mean? Well, that means competent people, regardless of race, yep, competent people are not getting the jobs. People are just being hired because they're a woman or they belong to a certain racial group. So competent people are being reduced. And you can do that to a certain extent because the competent people that are left, you know, will take up the slack and work harder to make sure the trains don't fall off the tracks. But you hit a critical mass and they just give up, or there's not enough of them to do that. You just keep eliminating them and now you hit a critical mass. But I think even larger than this, I think it looms larger than even that. And I think the primary reason is because the U.S. now, you see, the corruption is so endemic in this country that now things are breaking down. Things are breaking down because of the corruption. The corruption's so endemic. You've got the government comes out. And their budgets, just nobody knows where the money goes. I don't know how many times in my life that the government has said they're spending $1 trillion on infrastructure and the trains are falling off the tracks. Well, where'd the money go? The money got spent. Somebody got it. You always know the dead giveaway is when they're real vague about where the money's going, you know, but it sounds good. We're going to spend $500 billion on education. That is vague. Tell us where the money, who is getting the money? They're never going to tell you that. You can ask the question. I can ask the question. They ain't going to give you no damn answer. And the kids are dumber. The schools are stupid. The schools are just doing more and more stupid stuff. They're just focusing on more social issues. And the kids aren't getting taught. But that $500 billion when somebody got it. Quite a few somebody's got it. We're spending $1 trillion on infrastructure. The roads are so damn bad you can't drive down half of them. You're going to bend or crack a wheel from hitting a chuck hole in it. But that $1 trillion for the umpteenth time got spent. Somebody got that money. You see, it went in someone's pocket. That's what I mean. The corruption is so endemic now that things are breaking down. They're not working. So you can skim some corruption off. If you're going to spend... Let's use smaller numbers. If you're going to spend $1 million on something And you're going to skim 200,000 of that off the top for yourself and put it in the right pockets. You still got 800,000 going to what you said it was going to go on. And that might be enough. See, it's like how you get billed, you know, with the medical shit. You ever notice, like, you look at the statements and it's like, for this one medical procedure, you know, I don't know, they removed a hangnail. The insurance company, the hospital and doctor, you know, charged the insurance company $500,000. Insurance company responded and said, no, we only pay $25,000. And everybody's happy. But the procedure only costs like $500. You see, the money all got divvied up somewhere. That's the way it generally would work. They say, we're going to allocate $1 million for this. $800,000 isn't more than enough. But $200,000 going in everybody's pocket. You see, everything can continue to function with a certain level of corruption. Because it's not so endemic that, you know, things break down. The $800,000 in our example here is enough. It's enough to keep things rolling. And maybe not rolling at peak, but it's rolling. Everything, you know, the train ain't going to fall over. Dump all the chemicals up. And the $200,000 goes in everybody's pocket. But you see, the corruption is so endemic now, you ain't even getting you might get the $200,000 for what it's for, and the other $800,000 is going in everybody's pockets. And you sit there and say, you can't prove that. The trains are falling off the track for some reason. It's either what I say or what other people say, that there's a vicious conspiracy to knock the trains off the track. I mean, it's one or the other. I think I'm right. I think I'm right. The corruption is just so endemic now that the trains are falling off the track. Because all the money is just going in everybody's pocket. It's like the U.S. military is the biggest black hole. They can't audit the Pentagon. No one knows where this money is. This vast amount of money. Americans sit there and talk hella shit about the U.S. military is the most powerful military on the planet. And you better believe it, buddy. That supposed military might is based off how much money they spend. But the corruption is so endemic, no one even knows where that money goes. We got carrier groups. No one else has that. There's a reason no one else has that, because they're stupid. If this World War III reaches a phase where it's no longer asymmetrical warfare and goes into more of a conventional, like, fighting warfare, I believe it's going to be quickly revealed that the U.S. military is a shell. It's a facade. I really do. I believe that. Because, again, the corruption's so endemic. It looks mighty mean on paper. But in reality, is that going to be the reality? I don't know. We may wonder, we may find out. I don't know. I think Russia and China, it's their interest to stay with the asymmetrical model. But the way they're doing it is China erodes the dollar and the U.S. economy is breaking down, and Russia's grinding up their military ability to get aggressive. If that grinds on for much longer, then the U.S. ain't going to be able to take it to a more conventional stage of warfare if they wanted to or not. Now, the frightening part of that leaves nukes. I don't know. Spicy times. It's good stuff. Let's look at the clock. Time to get in the Christian specific segment. Let's do it. You know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I saw a video recently, and it was at a college, and you may or may not have seen this video as well. And they're having this talk or whatever, and this woman is speaking, and she asks a professor at the college, who's a professor in anthropology. And she says, when you dig up male and female bones, or you dig up a bunch of bones, can you tell by the bone structure whether it was male or female? Of course, even a layman, even a novice such as you or I, you know, we know the answer to that. And without missing a beat, this professor answers, no. And it got laughter. And the professor was very offended. And he says, why are you laughing? I have a PhD. One has to wonder why anybody bothers sending their kids to college anymore. But I was thinking about this. What does this have to do with our Christian specific message this week. I was thinking about, you know, credentialism, you know, in this case. I have a PhD. You see, his first reaction was to give the correct answer. Now, when you or I think, when someone asks us a question, when you or I consider the answer, we try to think of what is true. What you have to understand about these children of the devil is they don't. They think, what is the correct answer that I am supposed to give? And the correct answer is no, because of the current society. You see, the truth doesn't factor in. The truth doesn't matter at all. For these people, the correct answer is, what is the correct narrative for today? And if anybody laughs or questions their ridiculous false answer, they proclaim, I have credentials. I have a PhD. I'm a professor. I'm the expert in the room. What are you doing? It is an amazing thing because, again, this is foreign. And I think this is something that really trips people up, is do not understand that other people do not communicate the way we do. Like I say, if I ask you a question and you answer it, you know, you're trying to give me the most truthful answer because that's the only way we can learn. As the only way you can learn is if everybody cooperating, you know, everybody communicating rather back and forth is giving a truthful answer, then both of you work together. This is how debate, good faith debate, is supposed to work. If two people have a different view and they begin debating in good faith, you know, they're answering each other's questions in an attempt to, you know, they're giving the most truthful answer they can in an attempt to get to the truth, to get to the heart of the matter. For if one person has a view of a topic and the other person has a view of the topic that doesn't line up with that person's, then only one of them can be right. And both, the assumption is that both want to get to the truth. So you begin exchanging information in good faith that you believe to be true. And in an attempt, because it's not a matter of win or lose in the sense that the person who winds up being proven incorrect loses. That person is actually the winner because now they can modify their worldview and get closer to the truth. They're the winner. They're not the loser. You know, the problem is people go into a debate or something and they think, you know, I've got to win this debate. And the truth doesn't figure in. You want to win the debate. You want to get to the truth. If you wind up, you find out that you were the one who had incorrect information, and now you can modify your worldview and get closer to the truth. That makes you actually the winner of the debate because you gained something. The person who actually wound up being correct all along in the debate didn't gain anything. He comes out at the end, you know, I guess you could say he gained a, you know, more confidence in his position, but he doesn't really truly gain anything, where the person who was incorrect has gained something. Now they get to modify their view, and now they won because they are closer to the truth. Have you seen the world doesn't operate that way? Clown society doesn't operate that way. The correct answer is, what am I supposed to say? The truth doesn't factor in. And again, I say this because this is so foreign for us. And you have to understand, whenever you interact with these people, they are not communicating in good faith. They're not trying to get to the truth with you. They're not putting their ideas up for the test of truth. Their only, the reaction is, what am I supposed to say? What lines up with the narrative? And it doesn't matter how ridiculous or how ludicrous it is. Now, in the Christian community, we have all these Christian groups and, of course, mega MCCs and MCCs of all sorts of size and Christian groups that put up billboards and put up, you know, advertising on the Christian channel. And there's always a topic of charity. They're always talking about charity because one thing we're supposed to be as Christians, we know, is love and charity. And no doubt these groups or these MCCs, they got these preachers, and I'm sure they all have very good shiny degrees, just like that professor. I have a PhD. I went to seminary. I went to seminary and I studied under Professor so-and-so. I'm the expert in the room. For many of their messages, I ask myself, have any of these people actually ever read the Bible? Because they're always bedazzling. The Christian community, we're always getting bedazzled. These people are always, there's always these groups and these churches and these preachers, and they're trying to bedazzle us with their bedazzlement, their word wizardry. You're supposed to be very charitable. Why, look, there's someone on the other side of the world, the starving child. You should send money, some group, and trust them that they're going to spend it. They're going to spend it in a totally legit way. because you're supposed to be charitable. You're supposed to be charitable. Look, look, look. You need to open your borders and let everyone in because it's sad they're poor. Aren't you supposed to be charitable? Jesus was a refugee. And it goes on and on. And you wonder, do these people even read the Bible? But then I remind myself, the truth doesn't matter to them. You see, those who are openly of the world really aren't an issue. Once you grasp this, that they're not going to discuss things in good faith. They don't ask themselves, what is the truth? They ask themselves, what am I supposed to say? See, once you realize that and you debate with those of the world, then it becomes pretty easy. Would you got to be on guard for you? Or as we're told in the Bible, the wolves in sheep's clothing. Those who got the nice hair, those who are running an MCC, the preachers, the pastors who are going to sit there and tell you, you got to be charitable. It's right here. Look, I can read you a verse from the Bible. It talks about charity. You got to be charitable. We got to let everybody in. Jesus was a refugee. These are the ones that try to sneak in. They're deceptive. They're trying to lead you to an outcome. The truth doesn't have anything to do with it. Understanding this, you understand what they do, but still you wonder, do they even read the Bible? But they count. You see, this is why it's important. You know, I'm glad y'all listen to the show. I'm glad y'all listen to me. Hopefully you get something out of it. You know, especially the Christian specific segment. I'm serious. This is why I do the show. I'm 100% honest. If you come to me tomorrow and said you can no longer do the Christian specific show, that segment of the show, then I'm 100% done. You know, I don't get me wrong. I enjoy our discussions about, you know, politics or what's going on in clown world, or whatever. That's a part of the show too. But this is the reason I do the show. This, if I couldn't do this, I don't care anymore. I just let it all burn. I'm just anyway. But I'm glad you listen to the show. I'm glad you get something out of it. But I always say, you know, make it a try if there's any way possible. Can I understand people have jobs, people have bills, they got worries, and all these distractions in the world. But try to have Bible study on your own. You got your Bibles, read them, new and old, read them. And don't worry if you don't understand something, because it'll be later on when you read it. I don't know. I read passages in the Bible, and I don't know how many times I've read the passages. You know, I'm getting up in age, and I've spent so much of my life reading the Bible. And I read stuff that I've read probably, I don't know, hundreds of times at least. And I can still get something new out of it, new understanding. You know, it never ends. This isn't a textbook you read one time and now you get it. And you take a test and you get your degree and now you pass it. When you understand that people are going to use the Bible to deceive you, this is why you need to read the Bible and do your best and pray to understand as much as you can. So when they come around and they try to bedazzle you with their bullshit, you don't get deceived. You can say, wait a minute. Wait. Yes, you're hitting me something about how we're supposed to be charitable. And we get that that's a Christian thing. But hold on. Now you're trying to attach it to this whole other thing. In other words, maybe the question isn't to ask whether these people ever read the Bible. It's whether you ever read your Bible so that you don't get bedazzled with their bullshit. Charity. I use the example of charity for this. They tell you, you got to be charitable. You got to send money to the other side of the world. You got to let the whole world come and invade your country. Are we allowed to say invade? I don't know. I don't care. I said it. You got to let everybody come in. You got to open the borders, throw the doors open. If they can't come in across the border, by golly, we need to put them on an airplane and fly them in here, because as Christian believers, we have to be charitable. Jesus said to be charitable. They understand not. And perhaps they even worse, they do understand. They're attempting to deceive you. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. We're doing one verse. You think of all of the messages about your Christian charity. You got to be charitable. Look, starving child on the other side of the world. Put them on an airplane. Fly them to live here. and his entire extended family. It's sad that they're poor. Got to be charitable. Bible says so. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. An infidel. We get to use that word too, not just the Muslims. One verse, that's it. Since there's one verse, I'll say it again. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he'th denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. You want to know why they hate the Bible? Why they hate the word? Right there. Because one verse that it took me, what? Probably about 10 seconds to read. One verse takes all of the millions of dollars worth of propaganda, billboards, and bullshit and blows it up. All of their messaging about why you need to see this particular mega MCC money so they can buy a new airplane, so they can fly over to the other side of the world and bring people back, or fly food to the other side of the world because that's your Christian God-demanded duty. One verse that takes about 10 seconds to read blows all of that up. You got to take care of your own first, especially those of your own house. Now that's two included. You have to take care of your own, and especially those in your own house. So that means your family and your extended family. What do you think that means? They avoid actually teaching from the Bible because they don't ask what's the truth. They ask, what am I supposed to say? What's the correct answer? And the truth doesn't factor in. Sadly, I mean, like I said, we expect that from the world, but you got to understand there's a whole lot of people who have titles and degrees and went to seminary school, and they have that same mindset. What's the correct answer? Not what's the truth for you and I, hopefully for both, for all of us. For you and I, our answer is one and the same. Those two things are the same. You got to understand, for other people, that ain't the case. When they ask themselves, what's the correct answer? The truth is not anywhere in that orbit. They just think of what they're supposed to say. That's what they do. That's what they teach people in college. That's what they go to seminary school. They're taught what is the correct answer, not what's the truth. What is the correct answer? And that's how they get a degree. That's how they get a passing grade. They sit there and they learn to parrot back the correct answers. College. And I'm sorry. This is observable truth. College has nothing to do with learning as far as learning the truth or learning critical thinking skills. College is set up now on you are rewarded based on how well you parrot back what you're told by the professor. That's it. You're told, it is literally programming. You're told what to think, what is the correct answer. And if you parrot those back, you pass. If you parrot them back really, really well, then who knows? You might become a professor someday. You're not supposed to challenge their conventional thinking. You're not supposed to challenge their liberal orthodoxy. You're supposed to parrot it back. And that is the basis with which you were rewarded by. And that is the mindset that these people have. Well, that's why the professor in the video was so perplexed. Why are you laughing? I'm a PhD. I'm the expert in the room. And I gave the correct answer. In today's narrative, the correct answer is no, you can't tell the difference. It has nothing to do with the truth. If you take nothing else away from today's message, take this. This is your bullet point. You can take this to the bank because you see, you and I, you're listening and we're in a way conversing back and forth. I realize I can't hear you talking back at me, but we're having this discussion because you and I both, we want to get closer to the truth. We want to gain understanding. I gain it, even though I, you know, aside from the listener supporter mailbag, you know, I can't hear you, but even verbalizing these things to you helps me work through these things in my mind. That's why sometimes when I talk, it gets convoluted sounding because sometimes I'm still reworking this stuff. You know, I'm just still putting this stuff around in my mind because I want to be as close to the truth as possible. If you take nothing else from today's discussion, take this. Not everybody else is doing that. In fact, I'm going to tell you, in this sinful, satanic world, in the satanic world, many people, hell, maybe even most people, I don't know. I'm in a black pill mood today. Many people, most people, I don't know. But they don't come, they're not coming at the discussion with you on the basis of let's figure out what's the truth. They're not talking to you in good faith. They're trying to give the correct answer. We still got time. We're going to stay in 1 Timothy. We're going to stay in 1 Timothy. I can't talk now. I got all twisted up. I can't talk. 1 Timothy chapter 3. We're going to do verses 1 through 12. We're going to take our time going through this. Because we know the church is a mess. We know the church is a mess. MCC is a mess. Understand the church will survive. I'm not going to get into that. I was going to get into that today. I'm not. I'm just going to stick with what I got on here. We talk about how, you know, the church has been subverted. How did it get here? You know, that didn't happen today. It didn't even happen really necessarily just in like the current generation. This has happened for a minute. And again, it's because I'm holding my Bible up. Y'all can't see that, but I am holding my Bible up. We have an instruction guide, and at some point in time, church leadership over the generations slowly but surely started tossing the instruction manual out because they were smarter than people like Paul. They were smarter. They knew better. I won't even allow a woman to speak, much less teach in the church. That's too outdated. Paul, got to get with the times. The Bible is a living document. We got to change it. We have to throw out the parts we don't like. Got to understand how we got here. Let's understand how we got here. What are we doing? What did I say? 1 Timothy chapter 3. Blah. Verses 1 through 12. This is how we got here, because these are the instructions for church, for structuring church leadership. Those who are going to, because you're going to have to, you know, as a church grows, especially you got five dudes, you ain't exactly got to have, you know, a hierarchy and people organizing stuff. But as you have a larger congregation grow, you got to have people, you know, to help run things. You know, the preacher, the preacher's got to focus on preaching and teaching. He can't be doing every single thing. He's got to be able to delegate certain things. And this is where the subversion has come in. All of the people coming in, you just necessarily come in with a subverted preacher and work everything down. It works from the bottom up. All the people that get delegated to, it's where the rot starts. This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of bishop, he desireth a good work. It's a good work. And it is work. It is not a status symbol. It is a work. You're going to have a job to do, but it's a good thing. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach. Not given to wine, no striker, not greedy with filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, not greedy to filthy lucre. That means, I want to focus on that one for just a minute. Jesus said you can't serve two masters. You're going to pursue money or you're going to pursue me. There's one or the other. Now, understand, you got to have money. God knows you got to have money. You can't just like not have anything to live on. But what are you pursuing? Now, they've kind of twisted that around in teachings, and they say, well, it's okay. You just can't have a physical love for money. You see, you can go chasing after money all you want. That's fine. You got to be chasing after filthy lucre. That's all good. You just can't have an emotional love. You can't sit around. If as long as you don't put a stack of bills on the table and bow down and worship to it, then you're perfectly fine. It's a lie from hell. You can pursue Christ first. Or you could pursue money first. That doesn't mean you don't have to work. And you know, God don't hold it against you. You got to have a paycheck. You got to live. It's not what it's saying. What comes first? I've heard preachers of great prominence before proudly proclaim, I never took a vow of poverty and I am not going to be poor. I'm going to make my money. I'm going to preach this to you, but I'm going to make my money. They proudly proclaim chasing after filthy lucre. Greed of filthy lucre. They're pursuing that first. You see, Jesus made that very distinction. You can pursue money, or you're going to pursue him. Again, it doesn't mean you don't have to have money. God knows you do. You got to buy food. You got to have shelter. But it's a difference between what is the pursuit in your life. All right, where are we at here? Vigilant, sober, good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjugation with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own home, how shall he take care of the church of God? Now, this is a pretty exclusive list here. I mean, it very narrows down candidates quite a bit, doesn't it? But it goes on. It's a very exclusive job. Not a novice. I mean, you don't let someone in the church and like they've been there 6 weeks. They said they came forward and said they accepted Jesus 6 weeks ago. And while they so good and they're so willing, they're going to come in here and now you're going to make them a bishop 6 weeks later. You got to hire, you got to have somebody that have this position knows what the hell they're doing. Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he shall fall into the condemnation of the devil. You see, if they get this position early, you know, they might be ready for that position years from now. But if you do it early, then they're going to get all full of themselves. And you're going to have a bad result for both of you. Moreover, you see, we're not done. How many people want to be the bishop? And like all these people step forward. And then you start running down the list. Start leaving the room. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach in the snare of the devil. So he's even got to have a good reputation among the people that know him, that aren't even a part of the church. So, like, if he shows up to church, everybody's like, oh, yeah, you know, he looks like this guy checks all of the boxes. But yet, everyone in town thinks this guy's an asshole. Likewise, must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre. See, we do now. We were talking about bishops. Now we're shifting to deacons. Now we're moving over here to deacons. But you still have these requirements. Must be grave. You'd be serious people when it comes to the Word of God. Y'all may think I ain't serious because I like to laugh and I make jokes. But I am serious. I take this serious. Not double-tongued. Not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre. There's that thing again. Because if you're chasing after money, if there's somebody that's chasing after money all the time, they're pursuing money. That is their goal. They can't be pursuing Christ. They, one or the other. Holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. And let these also first be proved. Then let them use the office of a deacon, being found blameless. Even so, because it's not just now, not just them. You see, even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. You see, it's not even enough if the deacon, they're not talking about bishops, we're talking about deacons now. It ain't even enough that maybe they're checking off these boxes and it's like, yeah, it looks like this guy, you know, he meets all the requirements. We're not done. Because his wife is a real bitch. She's always gossiping about everybody. She's always running around. She's always doing all of these things. Sorry. Strike from the list. But it's not fair. We have an instruction manual. had generations ago of church leadership stuck with the instruction manual, we wouldn't be here today. Wouldn't be here today. You imagine, you get all these churches, these befuddled churches, and they got women. They got all of these women running around, heading up committees, this and that, and stirring up all kinds of drama, having all of these problems, spreading incompetence everywhere. And you see here, just as the wife of a deacon, these bitches wouldn't qualify. You got women running committees on churches that, if the instruction manual follow, forget them holding any position. That shouldn't even be up for consideration. If their husband, who seemed like an all right dude, was going to hold the office of deacon, he'd have to get told, well, you know, Jim, you're right. You know, I mean, and for the most part, you should be able to be a deacon in the church. But don't get all excited. Everybody knows about your old lady, man. And sorry, because of your old lady. Because of your old lady. Because it's bad judgment. And because if his old lady's running around doing all of these things, and that means he can't even run his own house, how are he going to be a deacon? You see, these things were taken seriously. It was understood that you had to have serious people in these, you know, being delegated these tasks in the church. You had to have serious people in there. Otherwise, you're going to have a mess because the preacher, the guy who's running the church, he can't do it all. Imagine getting told you can't be a deacon because you're old lady. Finish with verse 12. Let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their own houses well. Because you see, if you can't even run your own household, how are you going to run a church? How are you going to be given responsibilities and your house is a mess? Somebody's house is chaotic and a mess and you're going to put them in charge of a committee or whatever? And your committee, your church is going to be a mess because they can't even run their own house. When you got a group of people in the church that want to take it the wrong way and they got whether their motivation's good, bad, in between, but they're just wrong and they want to take the church. They think the church needs to go in this one divisive direction. And you, the deacon, and it's going to be your job to stand up and tell them, yeah, no, we're not doing that. That's stupid. If you ain't got the guts to stand up to your wife and say, no, we're not doing that. That's stupid. How are you going to be a deacon? How are you going to do the job? Why are these sorts of requirements, like what we're talking about right here, why is it required? Because as a leadership position, as a deacon, much less a bishop in the church, there's going to be times you're going to tell people no, and you're going to be pretty unpopular for it. And you're going to have the strength of character to do that. If you can't do that in your own house, you ain't going to do it for the church. And of course, all that's gone now. And it's been gone for a long time. Get down on ourselves because of the state of things. But I didn't do this. I didn't make the MCC what it is, and you didn't either. When people are down on Christianity, they're really down on the MCC, but we didn't do that. That had taken place over generations. This is where we understand failed leadership. Because along the line, it starts little by little, then just throw the whole thing out at first. But see, they started making compromises. We compromise on this one part of the instruction manual that we were given. These very specific instructions. This is specific, people. This is very specific. Does it check off the boxes? I mean, Paul could have given us like a checkbox list here. This is very specific instructions. This is why it's in here, because these are specific instructions of what to do. And you see, people started making compromises. They said, well, okay, he meets most of those qualifications. We'll go ahead and let it go. It doesn't say anywhere in here, does it say, well, if your bishop or your deacons meet 75% of these conditions, then they're good to go. So what are you supposed to do? What did you say? Well, we got to. We got to go like that. Because otherwise, this is just too strict. We won't have anything in here. That, he doesn't say 70% is a passing grade. Go ahead. Why? Because at the end of the day, you're better off with nobody holding that position than somebody who's not up to the task. Worse yet, letting somebody work their way in, wheedle their way in to start subverting the church. That's how we got here. And it's just, everybody wants to point at where we're at. Non-believers love doing that. They point at the MCC. They say, oh, you kissing. Yeah, just like these people up here. Everybody wants to point at where we're at. Like, yeah. But nobody wants to think about how did we get here? How did it come to pass? Well, obviously, we look in here and we have specific instructions, so people weren't following the instructions. I've taken up cooking, you know? I've taken up cooking. I've discovered I'm a pretty good cook. For the most, I can't fry food, though, worth the dang. I can't fry food. I don't know why. It should be like the easiest thing. I make these complicated recipes. I can't fry food worth a damn. I just can't. All my batter falls off. My batter falls off. I get the grease too hot. Don't get the grease hot enough. I hate it. I hate frying. It makes a mess. Thank goodness I discovered Shake and Bake. This program is not sponsored by Shake and Bake. Anyway, what I discovered about cooking, because I never have cooked in my life. What I discovered about cooking is if you can follow the instructions, it'll come out like it's supposed to. All you gotta do is follow the instructions. You know, you follow the direction and put the right amount of ingredients, mix them the proper way, cook them at the proper temperature for the proper amount of time, you're going to get the end result. You're not going to get some weird out of left field result. If you follow the instructions, you're going to get a casserole. If you don't follow the instructions, you're going to get something unedible. And here we have the instructions. Over the generations, had everybody stuck with the instructions, we would have gotten the same result. We would have gotten a good result. We're looking at this mess now, this absolute mess. Where does it come from? Well, because people weren't following the instructions. If they followed the instructions, we wouldn't have the MCC. It's that plain and that simple. It's not because Christianity was all along a secret conspiracy to lead people astray or any sort of gibberish like that. It's because people didn't follow the directions. A plain and simple. Anyway, there we go. There's the information. I don't know what you can do for it with it, but there it is. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here. Thank y'all for stopping by today. I thank you for tuning in, for listening. I do appreciate it. Thank you again for those of you who put something in the plate. Much appreciated. And we're going to go ahead and get on out of here, and hopefully we'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.